There it is. That's the abrupt intro ending. Welcome in. It is the John Cass Podcast. A reminder to follow, subscribe, whatever it is, on whatever platform you use for the John Cass Podcast so you don't miss a new episode for this new fall season, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, also on iHeartRadio too. So once again, follow and subscribe so you don't miss a new episode. Also, shout out Ian's Pizza, a few locations in Madison. I recently got to go to the Garver Mill feed location over the summer. It's outstanding. It's such a cool place just to go hang out, number one. And then there's Ian's Pizza there too. So check out Ian's Pizza on all their locations, at all their locations in Madison, there in Milwaukee as well. Well, today's guest covers Wisconsin Badger football for BadgerNotes.com. You can subscribe to his Badger Notes Substack for exclusive Wisconsin content. I'm excited today to talk a little bit about the 1-1 start for the Badger football team with Dylan Graff, who joins the podcast. Hey, Dylan.
Hey, John, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for jumping on and talking about the Badgers' 1-1 start to the season. And Washington State was the latest game. And that was, you know, when that game started and Washington State seemed offensively, everything was open for them. I'm talking out loud to myself as I'm watching the game. I'm like, oh, this can't keep up, or Wisconsin's going to get blown out of this game. And in that first half, it kind of seemed like that. How did you see overall the game and then the adjustments made that the Badgers actually were able to get back into this one?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be concerned to some degree about what you saw on defense. I mean, the defensive line is not getting the push that I think we're maybe accustomed to seeing. And, you know, a guy like Keanu Benton, obviously, in the past has kind of alleviated some of those concerns. But the pass rush in general has just not gotten home, you know. And I've reviewed the PFF numbers, and honestly, I think they've been way more favorable in terms of pressure numbers than the eye test indicates. But you know, Cam Ward had a lot of time. They weren't getting home. You know, there's a few guys that just assignment wise, it seems like they're not completely comfortable in their new role. And so yeah, they got down early in Washington State. They were the better team, and going into half, you know, it was a gut check, and obviously we know how the game ends up, but I will say they showed a lot of resiliency in that third quarter, and more specifically, sixth year quarterback Tanner Mordecai looked fantastic in the third quarter and gave them a fighting chance. You know, he completed 10 of 12 passes, over 100 yards, a nice touchdown to Skylar Bell just to inject some life, but you know, it's kind of the same old story. They just were not able to finish. I mean, I understand this is a new regime, but even going back to last year, like, they just could not execute. They couldn't take good enough care of the football. And I think that the end of the day is the number one thing. That's where it's got to start. Despite all of the things that we are unsure about and the things that haven't looked great yet, we are losing the turnover battle through 2 games, 5-0. And until that starts to until that gets taken care of, I'm unsure of what this team is just yet.
So would you say then Mordecai was the biggest difference maker for what started working? You mentioned Mordecai there. You know, he gets, you know, a Malusi TD and then Bryson Green, and you know, they start to get back into it a couple of plays there. Is Mordecai the biggest difference maker then in that second half?
Yeah, to me, absolutely. I mean, obviously he did have the two fumbles, but I mean, there's only so much you can do. Those are both off like blindside strip sacks. You know, obviously Jack Nelson had a tough day at the office, and I'm a huge believer in his talent. I don't anticipate this being a trend by any means, but you know, Mordecai, he looked really good. And I think that unfortunately the run game was just completely absent. And that's just an area where I don't think we've got any idea what this offense is supposed to look like, because they have been trying to set things up and they've just never been able to get where they want to go with that. There hasn't been enough cohesion between the run and pass games. You know, obviously it's predicated on like, we're going to take what the defense gives us, but in both games, we've seen just a very stark contrast in how they got the job done, how they moved the ball. And I don't think that's how this offense is intended to look, at least right now. So Mordecai, I think has taken maybe more heat than he should so far. This is just an offense that's disjointed, trying to find its identity and kind of struggling to do it. I mean, there's a lot of weapons, specifically pass catchers, but you know, I mean, Chimura Dike has 5 catches right now on the season. Bryson Green's a guy I'd love to see get involved more. He's got 6 catches right now. We've seen what Will Pauling can do. He does have 10 catches, but there are a lot of pass catchers that we need to find a way to get the ball. And honestly, the easiest way to do that is by opening it up with the run. And Braylon only having 7 carries, you know, it's pretty hard to wrap your head around. You know, ultimately, he did not execute when he got his carries, and you know, and that very well could be why. But the one thing that has also been frustrating is Braylon Allen's usage in the pass game. Like, yeah, it's great to see your tailback, you know, have 12, 13 catches, whatever it is. But when you have 2.3 yards per reception, it's not working. The swing passes to try to get him touches in space, at least thus far, isn't working. And I don't know. I think as frustrated as I've been with the defense, I have, through talking with my buddies, kind of talked myself into being equally as frustrated with the offense, because I just don't think I don't think there's a clear direction at this time.
Okay. I want to ask about the turning point of the game, in my opinion. Well, there's probably, you know, there's a lot of different plays that could, you know, determine the outcome of a game, but one that I thought was big, and it's not the safety, but I want to talk about that, or the non-safety, was Malusi fumbling in the fourth quarter. It really seemed like they kind of had a short field. They were ready to take the lead. They were trailing by 2, but then Malusi fumbles, and then Washington State, I believe, then takes it down the field for a touchdown. To me, that's the turning point, because it seemed like, okay, now we're going to get this thing done, and then all of a sudden that turnover. And you talked about turnovers earlier in this podcast right now. Turnover just kind of flipped everything back to the Cougars.
No, I couldn't agree more. That was just a really deflating moment of the game, where we had momentum on our side and it just sucked the life. I mean, on the road, obviously, you got to bring your own juice. And they had reclaimed it at that point. You know, Tanner, at third quarter was all Badgers. And it pretty much after that fumble, and you know, you can't blame the refs. There was no real great angle. All you can do is go with the call on the field, and they just weren't able to rebound from that. And defense at this point just hasn't proven the ability to take the ball away and, you know, hold their ground like we've seen in years past. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that was the moment of the game where it turned and there was really no coming back.
Okay, let's talk about the safety. Number one, listen, I understand I'm from Madison. We're from the state. Badger fans are listening to this podcast. And I'm guessing if I put out a poll question on X or Twitter today, it would be 99%. It was a safety. And part of me wants to say that too. And watching the replay, like, listen, Pac-12 officials historically are trash. I think, you know, how much did forward progress play in that? Because, you know, if you pause it at the right second, you don't have a down the goal line angle of the play, but I mean, I don't want to give the officials the benefit of the doubt, but I guess my point is, if I'm trying to be a neutral observer, and I'm watching this game and I don't have, you know, a bias toward either side, I'd say, I don't know about that one, but okay. That's the way I would look at it. How'd you see it?
Yeah. I think that in the heat of the moment, you know, you're kind of screaming at the TV, like, what's going on here? How could that not be a safety? But you're right. If you're going to answer it objectively, I think that it ultimately made the right call, the call that they only one that they could make. And, you know, there are a lot of people who want to point the fingers to that kind of being what lost us the game. And like, while I don't agree with that, I just don't think you can't put yourself in a position to let an official dictate the outcome of a game. Yeah. And that's kind of where they were at. And as frustrating as it is, because they did make a play at a huge juncture, just, yeah. I mean, obviously Pac-12 officials have a certain, people don't exactly love them, but yeah. I think they ultimately probably made the right call, as much as that's kind of hard to stomach.
And I was trying to say, was it 2013 Arizona State, Wisconsin? I was just going to say, like, I'm still, that game to me is still not over when, you know, like, I'm still waiting, get everybody back, have a 10-year reunion and have them replay the last few seconds of that game. Cause that game still is not over and will never be over in my mind.
Yeah. I've got time for that. I actually agree more. Yeah. Joel's his knee was down. I don't care what anyone has to say about that one. That one I'm not going to look at as objectively. They were dead ass wrong.
Yeah, for sure. But the safety, I mean, in real time, I'm like, boom, that's a safety. There's no doubt in my mind. Look how far deep he is into the end zone. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, it's just a big call because, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, Luke Fickell, I think, said, you know, you can't review that play because he had thought about taking a timeout. So had they called it the other way and said it was a safety, could you review it that way?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think that really all they could do is go with what was on the field, and I could be mistaken, but it's just those bang bang plays where, you know, they, like you said, you can stop it. You could pause it on any moment of the game and you can see what you want to see. And it just, it sucks. But at the end of the day, like, Washington State was the better team. And at least on that night, and that's the hard thing to stomach, is that Wisconsin on paper is a more talented team, but it can't be about on paper anymore. Like, you don't bring in a guy like Luke Fickell, you know, for it to be a process. Like, you know, first year head coaches, yes, they typically are going to end up getting kind of a grace period, if you will, but that goes out the window when you have a resume like him and you bring in a guy like Mordecai to win now, you know. And it's just really hard to stomach, and it's you don't know why they can't close and why they are losing to inferior opponents, you know, for going on a year and a half. And I don't know, it's tough. You know, credit to Washington State. They were the best team that night. They deserve to win 100%. It's just about, you know, how does Wisconsin kind of look themselves in the mirror, have a gut check? How do they bounce back? You know, they're still very capable of winning 9 games, but, you know, they're a good team, but they are ultimately going to determine the next coming weeks, you know, can they still have a chance to catch lightning in a bottle and be a great team?
Right. So how do they bounce back? That's the question you asked. And you also had mentioned earlier in your answers in this podcast that you don't think you've really seen the air raid offense at its full capacity yet. So you got another one, Georgia Southern, before the Big Ten starts, then that record starts to count even more and more for Wisconsin. So what do we have to see against Georgia Southern, in your opinion? And then moving forward as the Big Ten slate opens up, to get more confidence in that offense?
To me, it's got to come from a way of balance, you know, and obviously, like we said, it's about taking what the defense gives you, but you have to be able to capitalize on that so a defense can't turn you into a one-dimensional team. And that, I mean, that's obviously why Wisconsin felt the need to move on from a Paul Christ. You wanted to have both elements. And so what I would love to see is, you know, them being able to mix in Braylon and Chez and, you know, gashing them. I want to see, more than anything, the offensive line dominate an inferior opponent. I think the offensive line has been pretty ho-hum so far in both pass protection and run blocking. I want to see them opening lanes. I want them to give Tanner all the time in the world so that they can set up the quick hitters to our, you know, our pass catchers that eventually, I mean, that's kind of how the offense works. You hit the quick hitters, the slants, the screens and stuff like that to open up the over the top, like we saw with Skylar Bell in week 1. Now, had he completed that, obviously, I think a lot of people's opinion of this passing game, Tanner Mordecai specifically, looks a lot different. Right now, Mordecai is averaging 6.6 yards per attempt. And that's not terrific. You know, that's below even like what Graham Mertz was doing last year. But if he completes that, you know, we're pushing 8 yards per attempt. And that, over the last decade, only Ohio State quarterbacks have averaged that. So, like, you know, I think that we're not that – I think we're close to putting it all together, but we haven't seen it. And so I want to see them to be able to strike a balance. I don't really care what that means statistically, but I want it to – aesthetically, you can tell that one is complementing the other on that side of the ball. And then on defense, I want to see the pass rush. Like, C.J. Getz has been all right so far. Darrell Peterson has been – you know, credited with more pressures than I guess I have probably observed myself through rewatches, but he has, in my opinion, the highest upside, the most potential to become a guy who could, you know, be a sack artist you have to plan for, but we haven't seen it yet. You know, these are guys that we haven't seen force quarterbacks to make quick decisions. And I have a lot of questions about the defense as well. I mean, week 1, we rotate 4 cornerbacks, and then week 2, we rotate just 3. You know, is that sustainable when you get into Big Ten play? Probably not. You know, you suffer an injury, like, you're starting to get thin pretty quick, especially with Mike Max waiver still up in the air. And at this point, you know, it doesn't look super optimistic. And you haven't worked in a guy like Jonas Taclona yet. Don't think you want to do that at the beginning of Big Ten play. You know, that's not necessarily ideal. I think what the defense is right now lacking is a true star. I believe that Hunter Bowler is that guy and is about to become that guy over the next month. I think we're going to kind of watch that happen, but I think they lack this true star power that we've had in years past. I think there's plenty of good players, but would like to see them take a step towards dominance, getting after the quarterback on the defensive side of the ball and on offense, just finding a way, balanced approach, getting the ball to their playmakers in space and letting them go do what they do best.
Okay. Wisconsin taking on Georgia Southern. All right. Final moments of the podcast. I wanted to get a little bit of background about you. So badgernotes.com, by the way, and go check out the good, the bad, the ugly from that Badgers loss to Washington State. And they'll have everything you need to know about Wisconsin versus Georgia Southern as well. Badgernotes.com. How did you get into sports writing? How did you get to this point of your career covering the Badgers?
Got probably one of the more unconventional paths that you're gonna hear. I actually, okay. I spent 8 years working in corrections. And when I was working for the state prison system, we were working 16 hours a day, 90 hours a week. And really kind of came to a point where I needed an outlet, just something to do for me. I was a big Badger fan. So I created a blog. At that point it was the worst blog in the world. I have no technical ability at all. Yeah. But, I just started writing and I didn't even attach my name to it. At that point, it seemed like too intimate. I'm doing this for me. It caught on just a little bit. People actually started reading. It was pretty humbling. Asher Lowe took a chance on me at USA Today, gave me an opportunity to write there for about a year. And then my now business partner, Anthony Wright, a former Michigan Wolverines basketball player, reached out to me, told me, hey, I have a network of sites that I'm kind of kickstarting. Like we're going to have partnerships with Bleacher Report, Yardbarker, yada, yada. Like, would you have interest? And I absolutely did. So I have kind of full circle moment, the blog that I was, too shy to attach my name to in the past. We actually kept the domain, brought it forward with us as a part of the Full Ride Network. And now been writing over there and actually just kind of making it my mission. Some of the smartest sports fans I know don't have a platform to talk about sports. And so it's kind of my mission to just provide that avenue for anybody else who wants to give it a try. No matter what capacity, I want people to reach out to me. I didn't go to school to write. I just started doing it. And very, very humbling that anybody takes any amount of time out of their day to read a single word that I've ever written down. And I just want to give that opportunity to anybody else who's looking for it as well. Like I said, some of the smartest people I know don't have a platform, and it's just my goal to hopefully provide it to somebody else that can use that as a way to, bolt their career, get some exposure, just do something they love. We're all Badger fans, and it's fun to be able to talk about it with other Badger fans.
Yeah. And that's what the internet has allowed, right? It's allowed everyone to have a voice, including and those to write and to podcast and to create content that they would not have had 5, 10, 15 years ago. Wait, so you were within the police department, like within the prison system, 90 hour weeks? Was everyone, is that like right now, does everyone still work 90 hour weeks?
I can't say for certain at this point, but I worked for the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. I worked at the maximum security prison in Portage, and we were pretty routinely working 90 hour weeks, 16 hour a day. And then I after a couple of years there, went and worked for the Columbia County Sheriff's Department working out of the jail, and that was a lot more controlled environment in terms of hours. We had as normal of a schedule as you can working a job like that. So it allowed more time for me to kind of pursue some of these other passions as well.
Because I'll tell you what, I'm not trying to disrespect any organizations, but man, you are going to lose your employees when you're working them 90 hours a week. No one wants that job. Nobody will want that job.
It was tough, but there were a lot of beautiful things that came of it too.
Sure.
Working amongst every kind of walk of life, you get to know people on like a really intimate level, and it is really humbling because like you think you kind of understand your surroundings, and you really don't know what's going on around you and in these communities. And just like, there are so many good people that taught me a lot of lessons working in there that I will carry with me for the rest of my life. It just, I think it shaped me into a more well-rounded individual. And it, like I said, just working in that environment, it's not for everybody, but I took a lot away from it. And I would like to think that it made me a better communicator, more effective communicator, and maybe a more empathetic person along the way.
Sure, sure. Okay, I've talked about the Substack at the start of this podcast, and I'm sure there are people, including myself, that aren't exactly sure how the Substack works. So can you explain to our listeners what kind of content they can get from your Substack and how that works and how much that costs?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we have a Substack, badgernotes.substack.com. And on there, basically what it is if you, some people don't, you know, that maybe aren't as like technologically inclined, that don't want to visit the website or whatever, like on the Substack, we have where you can enter email, and then every morning at 6:15, you will have an article dropped in there. It could vary anything from, you know, just like weekly coverage. I have the only analytics coverage in the entire Wisconsin Badger sphere right now. I have a specialist who, you know, handles all of that. He puts out 3 posts a week, you know, a deep dive that's covering what happened in the game, kind of like deep EPA stats, stuff like that. You know, different. It's a lot of it's over my head. Even this is one of the most intelligent guys that is doing any form of coverage. And then he also does an opponent preview using analytics and like a lot of charting. It's really good stuff.
I love the charts and the numbers. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really unique coverage. And so we have that there as well. And then we also have a gambling corner. And so it's a slightly different content calendar, a few different items than like you're going to find on the website, and just delivered straight to your email. So, you know, we have a couple days a week, they're free. But then there are also ones that are behind a paywall, and those are, it's $3.50 per month if you would like to become a member. And with that, you know, we have kind of some exclusive partnerships. We work alongside Tom Brady's company, Autograph, and members kind of get, they have access to certain things that maybe you wouldn't just by being, you know, an avid reader of the website.
Okay, very cool. Dylan? Thank you so much for the time. Maybe we can talk some Badger football again down the road, and hopefully we get to learn more of what the air raid offense is all about.
Absolutely. I love that. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Dylan Graff from Badger Notes. Once again, subscribe to Dylan and go check out Badger Notes and the Substack for Badger Notes too. Thanks for listening to this podcast. We'll have another one coming up. Going to talk some Packers, I believe, next week. Don't worry, volleyball fans. I will still have volleyball for you. Hey, Badgers just beat Marquette in front of 17,037 fans. That was pretty fun watching that, covering that match rather at Fiserv Forum. And man, Marquette was tough. Wisconsin had to make that run in the third. The turning point of that match was that third set and the 5-0 run to end it. Otherwise, that one would have been going to 5 sets, and who knows what happens in the fifth. Heck, even the 28-26 win in the first, and now Wisconsin has, oh my gosh, I can't wait for Sunday. Sunday, number one versus number three, Wisconsin at Florida. Now, they're going to play at the Gators basketball arena. In fact, Florida has a select number of matches in the basketball arena, but it holds just over 10,000. So we'll see what kind of crowd Wisconsin play. I mean, this year, the Badgers have played in front of some big crowds. So not only does it show the draw that Wisconsin is, but it just shows the interest in volleyball too. A record for attendance in Arkansas when they played that first match against the Razorbacks in late August. You've got always 7,000 plus at the Fieldhouse watching them in their first few home matches. The 17,000 at Fiserv Forum. You know, what will we get to on Sunday? It's pretty fun. It's pretty exciting. To see volleyball really make a big leap, I think, in 2023, and the network coverage that they're going to have later on. Circle the calendars once again for October 29th, Wisconsin and Minnesota, following Fox NFL football between the Packers and the Vikings. So that's a pretty good lead-in, I would think. But we'll have another volleyball podcast coming up shortly as well. Talk Packers, talk Badgers. And once again, thanks for listening to this podcast, and you can help support the podcast by following or subscribing and then clicking on that new episode when you get it. All right. Thanks for listening to this edition of the John Cass podcast. Goodbye.